Peter Parker, MJ, and Ned. Quoth, Simon, and Willem. Or Ron, Harry, and Hermione. Best fictional friendships.
I'm a real big fan of Peter, MJ, and Ned. Honestly, I feel like that's the most emblematic of like my own high school friendships, and it just feels the most relatable. There's a lot to be said about Quoth, Willem, and Simon. Looking back as an adult to Harry, Ron, and Hermione, I just get a little irritated because I feel like Hermione could have done better. And I actually really like Ron as a character. I just feel like the way they were set up, it is an example of triangulation.
Yeah.
To the nth. So yeah, I think I'm actually going to go with Peter, MJ, and Ned.
I'm assuming we're talking Peter, MJ, and Ned from the MCU Spider-Man movies.
Correct.
Specifically, right?
Correct.
Okay. Because technically that doesn't really work in most iterations of the comics.
No, it doesn't. No.
No, right.
What?
Yeah,
why?
I thought you were serious for a second. I was like, wait,
Kyle's face
do I really
just
what?
Fell. Like, do I have to explain Spider-Man to Alan?
See, Kyle, just for you, I almost did Peter, Gwen, Stacy, and Ned. Like, knowing that the timelines were slightly off, but also knowing
right.
how awkward that makes it because there's a big old event in the middle of that that changes
things.
Thank
you things. For not. Thank you for letting
right.
us enjoy something.
Not to mention
something
the whole,
once.
Like, love triangle thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Going in those early issues. And,
yep.
Yeah.
Thank you for letting us enjoy one thing.
Right. So, I do have to say, actually, the friendship between Quoth, Willem, and Simon was one of my favorite things about Rothfuss's books. I really enjoyed all three of them as characters and their dynamic together.
Uh-huh.
And it was really actually like that was when I was the most invested in the books was when they were at school and we would get their interactions all the time. Like that was the biggest hook for me for a long time. I kind of the same thing as you, Ashley, on the Harry, Ron, Hermione thing. I have to admit, I've always had a hardcore crush on Hermione.
Well, yeah.
So, like, Ron and Harry, I'm just like, guys, get out of the way. Like, right?
I think anyone who is anyone had a crush on Hermione.
That's fair. So, yeah, I think I will land in the same place. I do enjoy, I think Tom Holland just captures the nerdy yet really socially awkward Peter Parker that we've always wanted, you know?
Yeah.
And I think having Ned and MJ to kind of play off of that in a really effective way has been a really fun experience for those films. So I'm landing in the same place.
Yeah, I think I really enjoy Ned as like the sidekick best friend because he really does have his own particular set of skills. He's not a throwaway character. He's not just, I mean, he's comic relief for sure, but they're all comic relief in their own ways.
Yeah.
There doesn't feel like there's any one outlier. They all serve a purpose to the team.
Yeah. No, I agree with that completely. I too am going to just toss out Ron, Harry, Hermione, because I agree. It always felt super weird. And then in, what was that, book 6, when they introduced the Ginny Harry thing, I was like, I feel icky reading. Like, there was something icky about it the first time I read
I
was like,
I didn't feel icky about
it.
It was
uncomfortable.
It was more just irritating because Ginny really didn't have a place in their friend group. And then suddenly she was just kind of inserted into it to have romance.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then I was totally on the Harry Hermione ship.
Ew,
like
no.
Early, like I enjoyed that, but that's fine. So this is where I'm torn because
just listen to your heart, Alan. We all know what you want.
Do you?
What number re-listen are we when it comes to the King Killer Chronicles?
At this point, I have lost track.
Yeah, so that's when you know that you should probably just be honest.
I mean, and we've been doing this every... At least once a year. We restart the cycle once a year and do all three books that are out.
Yeah.
So, and we've been doing that since 2015?
I think so, yeah.
So, 6 years now. So... And I've done it 2 or 3 times solo. So, yeah, definitely like 10th or 12th time through the books. Because, yeah, I love them.
But, I mean, to be fair, it's not just you. I often request them.
It's true. You do. Like, we, after we finish the cycle, we typically add a different book to the rotation. For the longest time, it was Dune trying to gently nudge you, encourage,
and then guys,
you to finish
Dune. Dear listeners, I actually read the dang book.
She did. She
finished it recently. We were on vacation for our anniversary. That was my gift to Alan, reading that damn book and finishing it. I got past page 5 and kept going.
I will say, it was the most satisfying thing when she closed the cover and she said, okay, I can understand why you appreciate this book. Here are my list of complaints. And to my credit, all the complaints that you listed off, I was like, correct. I agree with your assessment. This is a flaw with the book. However, the Quoth Willem Simon relationship is like the friendship that I wanted college to be that I never had.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like I'm only just getting a taste of now in real life, like having a group of people that have that kind of banter and relationship. And not to say I don't have that with my two dear co-hosts, but having that with a different external podcast group.
I will say this. This is the first time that you have made friends that weren't also my friends, or you became friends with friends that I had in college.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy for you to have a squad that does not include me, because I'm very tired.
Ash is like, I don't want to share anymore.
I'm getting to the point in my age where I'd like to settle and not meet any more new people.
I feel like I could contextualize this conversation in a way that makes me feel like the weird like child in the divorce here. Being that friend who is friends with both of you.
But like, we met you at the same time. That was like that was a weird thing for us, because usually I was always the one in school, so I was always the one bringing friends over.
Yeah,
and Alan would come home and be like, "Oh, a new person in our home that
Hello.
We share."
It's greetings and salutations.
Where we
How
actually were introduced to you and met you at the same time.
I remember it well. It was a potluck dinner, and
yes,
I sat down next to you, and we started talking role play and. At that time, Pathfinder, and you just kind of perked up, and I could tell you were eager, but you were also super, super shy at that moment. And I was just like, I remember when Ashley was like, oh, Kyle's going to come over, her ploy to make our friendship happen.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I liked him when we met him. Like, what? Where has he disappeared to? Like, I feel like I haven't seen him, like, ever.
He fell headfirst into a box of magic decks and... We had to dig him out.
Actually, to be fair, my first like 2 years, my first 2 years of seminary were the one time frame where I decided I wasn't going to do magic for a while, which then, of course, started coming back like around the time that we started becoming good friends.
Yeah, because we're in April.
I realized. Yeah, right. I realized in hindsight how much like it was so funny for me coming back out here, because I didn't realize how severe my like turtliness had become when I was living in Chicago until I moved back home, and I'm like, I feel so much more comfortable. Why did I just not the whole time I lived out there, I was just like, nope, social experiences, friends, nope.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So I'm going to officially voice in for the answer that surprises no one. And I'm going to say Quoth, Simon, and Willem. And I will say, for the differences that we do get in the relationship, there's a really interesting dynamic that's there, that they speak truth to him in a way that a lot of friends don't.
Yeah.
Even when they're saying, all right, you numbskull, like, hear what we're saying to you. Like, the whole instance where Quoth is drugged with a plumb bob, and he ends up literally not being able to have any sort of inhibitions whatsoever. And so he's acting on pure instinct and pure, I need to just go do the thing. And Simon acts as what they call a touchstone, and basically says, okay, I need you to listen to me, and I am your decision maker. And Quoth agrees to it. And like, can you name me a reason right now why killing Ambrose would be a bad idea? And Quoth can't answer the question, because his any sort of filters have been stripped away because of the alchemical poison. And Simon's just like, yeah, that. Like, no, no. Hear me three times. I actually use the phrase, hear me three times, in standard conversation now.
By standard conversation, he means with me.
And with Dane.
With Dane.
But it's just, I use that is such an example of friends caring. And like, okay, this, I'm going to put on tinfoil hat here. The biggest, one of the biggest questions that we don't get in the first two books that I'm trying desperately to figure out is, what on earth Will and Sim think happened to Quoth when he inevitably, quote unquote, kills the king and appears to be dead and goes off grid. Like, if an old storyteller can find him, his best friend should be able to find him. Why can't they? And that's one of those questions that haunts me. And I'm like,
yeah, I don't want to think about that.
It's like, what happened to Ari? It's a question I can't go too deep in, because I think the answer is going to make me incredibly upset, because I have my tinfoil hat theories.
Sure.
And this could very easily become the tinfoil hat podcast of Rothfuss. I'm not going to go there.
That. What I will ask, though, what do you think is the defining characteristic between the Peter, MJ, Ned friendship and the Quoth, Simon, Willem friendship? Like, if you were to give it one adjective.
Good question. I'm going to use a phrase, not a singular adjective, just to break the rules slightly.
Gee, shocker.
The chat. Like, it's their banter.
Oh, well, then it's Bants. You just say Bants.
Bants?
Yeah, it's the Bants.
I don't know that one.
Playfully teasing and or mocking comments exchanged with another person.
Okay, so the Scottish version of that would just be the chat. The banter.
Yeah, I mean, it's a generalized UK term, but yeah. I knew I had heard it somewhere.
That term is just unfamiliar with me. That's fun. I learned something new. The Bants. Kyle.
I think the mutuality actually is what strikes me about both of those friendship groups. Because I think, especially compared to, you know, Harry, Ron, and Hermione, the thing about that trio is Harry and Ron are like, I'm gonna overstate this a little bit, but they're nothing without Hermione, right? Yeah. Like, they're constantly cheating off of her. They're constantly relying on her. And even Harry, and this is one of my favorite lines in the films, even Harry at some point, he's like, guys, I don't know anything. He's like, I've only survived by sheer dumb luck and circumstance. Like, stop acting like I'm the hotshot around. I have no idea what I'm doing, right? And so I think that's something where their friendship has always felt a little off kilter in that sense. Whereas the other two trios, it's very different, because they all recognize each other's strengths and know how to rely on each other's strengths, and also know how to call each other out when somebody's doing something dumb, right? Like, they're not going to put up with each other when something's not going the way that it should be.
Yeah. Yeah, I never understood why Hermione stuck around with them. I feel like she would have gotten bored very quickly for as intelligent as she was, especially when she was dealing with the time turner. If you're that tired all the time, why would you hang out with a bunch of guys that are just like not fueling you and not being supportive?
Super dense, mediocre talents.
Right. Yeah. Like, I did not get this time turner to do the emotional load for you guys.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think mutualities are really great.
That's a good descriptor. Term.
I like that a lot. And now I'm going to be measuring all friend trios in all of my media now based off of that.
See, another one that I had on my list, but then I remember that Kyle has not made it all the way through it, is Al, Ed, and Winry from Full Metal Alchemist. Now, the trouble with that is two of them are siblings, which is complicated, but that trio is also delightful.
Yeah, no, that's true. That is a good one. I think I get really impatient because there's the weirdness between Ed and Winry, and then poor Al's just a suit of armor.
Yeah.
So he's the best of the three of them. He's the best boy. But there's not a lot of mutuality like Kyle described.
No, that is fair. There's more mutuality between them and Mustang than the three. And that's a weird, awkward power dynamic too, because technically speaking, Ed reports to Mustang. So
yeah,
we're getting too deep into the weeds though, because I don't want to leave Kyle behind. Kyle, you totally have to binge that one of these days. It's so good and will make you weep big tears.
I would actually be very curious to hear your opinion on that show.
I'll have to catch up. And then I've been doing so much.
Then we could have Nasha back out again to talk Full Metal Alchemist, and I know she would do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, if she wasn't on like 8 other podcasts, I'd just be like, can she just be a fourth host? So banter, I think, is a great descriptor. Mutuality, I think, is one that I definitely slept on. I think with both of those, there's a level. What I was thinking of was like vulnerability or honesty.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That I think.
Yeah.
You can only have, I feel like these all kind of coexist, because you can't have banter if you don't really trust your discussion partner. Because I'm speaking just from my own personal experience. I don't feel like I can have banter with people if I don't trust them to not go overboard, or if they were to go overboard at some point, to not kind of like recognize that and check themselves.
Sure.
Because there's nothing more exhausting than feeling like you have to like sort of babysit somebody in a conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
And kindly say, and constantly say like, hey, that wasn't cool what you said. That's just exhausting. And then the idea of mutuality, I think you need to have the sort of level playing field of honesty. And your friendships can't really deepen if you're unwilling to be vulnerable with one another. And vulnerability is honestly something, especially through Lent, that I've been thinking about a lot and meditating on. Not really any sort of deep study. I haven't been like reading essays about it or anything, but I think just in my own life, times when I feel like I have really strong-armed vulnerability, and not even for good reasons, because I think there are times when you feel like you have to put on a suit of armor just to kind of like emotionally defend yourself. And I think there are valid reasons for doing that. But I think sometimes you get into such a, it becomes such a muscle memory sort of knee jerk reaction that sometimes you start to strong arm vulnerability when you really don't need to be. And that can be really difficult, I think, to sort of unlearn.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is where I think I really value friendships where that's easier to kind of like melt into. Like, that's what it feels like to me, is like I'm melting.
Yeah, like fictional narrow version of that. We just named him Quoth.
Yeah.
Like, literally, yeah. All he was vulnerable, so he learned to build this suit of armor of mm-hmm. lies, reputation, and trickery mm-hmm. to keep himself safe. And at the end of the day, his main operating thing, like, Maslow is, like, he does not feel safe or secure anywhere. So he learns magic to give himself power so he never feels that weak again. Or he uses weak. Vulnerable is another synonym for yeah. it. Like, so he's never that vulnerable or powerless against something again. And that's yeah. his whole MO. And you watch him, you watch, like, Elodin try to deconstruct that mm-hmm. and push him with, like, the power of magic. You watch Tempe do that. You watch when he's with the Adem, you watch him learn the extent to which he learns a physical skill to protect himself and literally gets himself beat within an inch of his life
yeah.
by his teacher because he says, oh no, I'm using, what is the purpose of learning how to use all this stuff if I don't use it on people?
Yeah. Perennial question of defense against the dark arts.
But no, I think that's a great segue. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great synonym and kind of bridge between the two relationships there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think you're right too. It is a great segue into tonight's topic, which is it's probably not one that people will have thought of, but Lenten discipline of friendship, of having these sort of close-knit relationships that kind of hold us accountable to our everyday actions, which accountability is not like a super popular thing right now.
But yet it is. And on this, the 175th episode of the Min-Max podcast, talking about really? Holding ourselves accountable.
Yeah.
Hope everyone is well. Obviously, Ashley's already introed us. But before we get going too far, we do have a little bit of an exciting announcement here. You guys will remember that back in late 2019 and early 2020, we had a sponsor on the podcast for a hot minute for Thy Geekdom Come, for their devotional book that came out in that time frame. Our very own Ashley Mowers has contributed 2 additional devotionals to this book. And so we've come alongside of them again to help promote this book and in the run-up to the release of the book. So, as geeks, we don't argue over whether Chronicles of Narnia is superior to The Lord of the Rings. We discuss things like why Mr. Tumnus and Gandalf might be best friends. As geeks, we delve into the depths of our fandoms because they have shaped so much of who we are. Shouldn't the same be true of our faith? Thy Geekdom Come is a devotional series for Christian geeks who don't like devotionals, who want a devotional that will go in-depth into both our lives as geeks and our faith. Thy Geekdom Come Volume 2 and a 5-day free version is now available at geekdevo.com.
For pre-order.
That's GEEKDEVO.com. So once again, we are super excited about Ashley dropping a couple new devotionals in this and for the release of the new volume of Thy Geekdom Come. It's so much fun to get geeky devotionals that actually ask questions and aren't the, I'll just go and say it, crap devotionals that end up being shallow and only minorly thought-provoking questions. Like, nerd content that forces you to engage with deeper topics is a win and is a fantastic gift for that nerdy person in your life. So there you go. Thy Geekdom Come 2. I don't know why I want to call it like Geekiness Returns, but that's the first thing that popped in my head is Thy Geekdom Come 2. The Geekiness Returns. But that's just me. Anyway, friendship.
Yeah, so I think... I realize I start a lot of my sentences with I think. I should hope I think. But what I hear a lot when people talk about their friendships is that they pair them with an activity that they enjoy doing.
Sure.
Which I think is obviously valid. You want to enjoy being with your friends. I think the idea of the discipline of friendship isn't just doing hobbies with them, though, or spending just enjoyable time as much as we desperately all want that after quarantine. But as well as building upon that relationship with them and making it something other than just a person you enjoy. 'Cause I have friends that they're not just like social hobbies. Like I've had real conflict with them. We've gone through things together. They know things about me that I probably wouldn't want getting out because, you know, you share things. So I think the discipline of friendship, it's that kind of friendship. It's the sort of hard won friendship, the friendship that friendship that's seen things as opposed to, you know, an acquaintance that you just really, you know, would like to get to know better. Because
yeah,
it's the work of friendship, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. It's putting in the time and the effort. And I think it's really easy to leave off one or the other.
Oh, for sure.
In the art scene, I saw a lot of this specifically in theater where you'd kind of like manufacture intimacy for the sake of a scene. You'd kind of try to like, and this was where you'd kind of get into like the young, unhealthy actor pools where everyone wanted to be authentic on stage. So they'd kind of just like emotionally bait one another.
Force each other to fall in love with each other just a little bit, yeah, to make it given just enough tension to give their, to like be a little bit of texture or tooth to the
right
lines.
Yeah, and that's just indicative, I think, of a really unskilled director.
Yeah.
Feeling like you have to play mind games with your actors to get them to act well. You don't need to do that, but that's a whole nother topic and I'll spare you. But there was this sort of like emotional baiting to get people to a high, to present well in a scene. And so you'd have these sort of, you know, showmances. They'd have a term for it specifically because these exist so frequently. And I think you'd get that in friendships as well.
Oh, for sure.
Where people would be really tight and then the show would end and everyone would cry and weep at the cast party and talk about how close they all are.
And how they'd never lose touch the rest of their lives.
Right. Well, and then the next round of auditions comes and everyone's frenemies again because you're all vying for the same roles. That's not the type of friendship. I mean, it feels real in the moment because it's so emotionally charged.
You're investing so many hours in such a short period of time.
Yeah. So I empathize with it, but that's not the kind of friendship I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Nor am I talking about, you know, the people that you just sort of have the one thing you do together and you don't have anything beyond the one thing you do together. And you always have positive feelings about those people because you only see them in this one specific context and you never have any conflict and you never, so you don't want to force, obviously, the emotional depth because it's never going to be real or lasting. It's just always going to be dramatic and passionate, which I don't think is quality. But you also don't want to have like the sort of shallow sort of like, I always enjoy that person. They're
yeah.
Always so good to me.
And I think an additional component of this too, because like we've talked about this before, but to pull the podcast curtain back a little bit,
yeah,
like we all started as people who discovered we enjoyed spending time with each other. Mm-hmm. But there was a period of time, what was it, 2017? Like halfway through 2017, about a year into the podcast, maybe 9 months into the podcast, that the rubber hit the road and life happened for all of us and it caused some real tension between all of us. And we we actively fought with each other and we came out the other side and realized, like, I remember one specific night where Kyle came over to our apartment at that time and we sat down for 4.5 hours.
I mean, to be fair to all of us, we probably would have spent that 4.5 hours together anyway.
Yes.
But
this right. particular instance was an intense, we are having a podcast friend meeting.
It's true.
It was so intense. It just a lot of life had happened. And we were learning how to communicate with each other. And we were learning how to take care of each other as friends. And after that moment, like, we passed, like, it's like we broke through, like, this friendship glass ceiling that suddenly it wasn't just this surface level friendship of, yes, we enjoy doing these things together. Yes, we do a podcast together, but I don't let you into certain corners of my life.
Yeah.
It was like, no.
We're family now. We are bonded by blood.
Right.
Like, we have dealt with some serious ish.
Mm-hmm.
And
now everyone's going to be wondering what the conflict was.
And you're going to have to suck it up and deal with it because it was a lot of stuff.
Right.
It was.
It was never any one thing. But again, when you're spending a lot of time together and you're also, you know, producing a project that you all really care about, it's almost like the friendships you make in a play during a production season.
Uh-huh.
Except that season never ends. So you right. really need the longevity of it. But yeah, no, that's a great example.
There's another component too that I think is one that I struggled with for years, honestly. And it's something that I've only just started to find in my adult life. And it was friendships that the care was mutual.
Mm.
Yes.
Because I have put myself in so many different friendships to where I was investing tons of time and tons of hours only to discover later on down the line that the depth and the desire to be around those people was not mutual.
Yeah.
And there was a period of years there that was really difficult
mm-hmm.
and was really lonely.
Yeah.
And especially after my dad died, like there was a period after that it was just like, I don't have any close friends that aren't Ashley's friends.
Yeah.
And then I would start friendships up and then I would invest, I would put time in and things, and then it would start fine, but then it would fade. And it was like, I was willing to put more time and effort in than the people had time or were willing to give.
Mm-hmm.
And it always kind of left me feeling sad and empty. And it wasn't until I found Kyle and Ashley, like, to say that your spouse can't be your friend is stupid.
Yeah.
Making them your only friend is dangerous, but
right, yeah,
right,
which is a whole different, like, we can go there if we want to, but putting all the pressure of being your spouse and your best friend is a super dangerous thing that sets you up for failure, both
yeah.
parties.
Well, I mean, just briefly, like, when we first got married, there was that assumption from some of our friends that we would only ever want to hang out with one another, and so they just kind of stopped inviting us to things, and they thought they were giving us the appropriate space to just be a new married couple. And what it felt like to us when we came back from our honeymoon was, oh, do our friends not like us anymore?
Yeah, suddenly
we haven't
got ghosted.
Heard from them for ages. And that was just a learning experience for all of us because we were the first in that friend group to get married.
Sure.
So it was a very confusing period. And thank God. And then Alan and I had to go through the period of, like, we don't always have to spend time together. We can do other things that don't require the other person to be present. And in fact, we need that.
Right.
Yeah, it was like, and I don't know if this was just growing up evangelical and Pentecostal or what it was, but it was like having friendships, God forbid friendships of another gender,
mm-hmm.
was a betrayal to your spouse.
Yeah.
And that took a lot of years to undo, to know that having friends that were of an opposite gender was not a terrible offense to your spouse.
Yeah, it was interesting. I remember trying to explain it once to somebody, like, okay, you have a sibling. Are you tempted by that sibling? That's like what having another friend outside of your marriage is like. It's like having a sibling. So long as you frame it in those terms, it's really, it's when you get out of those terms that it gets a little awkward.
Yes, 100%. Right.
Yeah, well, and I feel like so much of that is wrapped up in the church's very limited and specific views around sexuality. That is a whole nother conversation also.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's just like, I don't know, people need to be friends with who they're friends with.
Right.
And yeah, as long as everybody's kind of, I don't want to staying on their toes, because that makes it feel like you have to be constantly vigilant and then you're
right
back into the
That's
same
exhausting
problem, right? But it's still, you still have to be aware that, you know,
yeah,
and kind of frame it, like you said, Ashley, in the right way.
Yeah, yeah. Mindfulness, I think, is totally necessary, but it is exhausting when you feel like you're looking for demons that aren't there.
Right.
And then you realize, oh, I could have probably actually been friends with that person if we hadn't been in this context, that immediately set us up for failure.
Right.
Yeah. Like establishing proper boundaries and things like that's a whole nother conversation, but
right.
Like,
but I think if you're friends with people, those are kind of a given. Like there's never
right
been a point in time where I felt like I had to sit Kyle down and go, okay, now we need to talk about proper boundaries. You know, like there have been those times when I've had an acquaintance and I've been like, oh, I don't think I'm going to be able to be vulnerable with this person. Like, this is going to get awkward real quick.
Yeah. Whereas Kyle literally had a key to our house.
Yeah. Like, that was a no-brainer. But we knew we could trust him.
I kind of forgot about that, to be honest with you. I'm honored,
like, you
all
literally
over again
would go over to our house and just hang out there before we got back.
Because we told you to. Because we're like, it doesn't matter.
I don't know. If we carry on too long with this episode, I'm going to start feeling more and more like a stray dog, guys.
Oh, no.
Just kidding.
No.
No, I love the going back to, you know, being vulnerable with each other. And I think really setting boundaries is a part of or really goes hand in hand with vulnerability, right? Because you have to be able to be comfortable with that everybody knows and understands the boundaries to know and understand how vulnerable you can be with one another.
Yeah.
In any relationship, but in a friendship especially, right?
Right.
It's like we all have friends that we're going to trust with certain pieces of information and not with others, or, you know, certain things where it's like, I would trust this friend with my life. I'm not sure I would trust them to, you know, like not do something stupid with my stuff, right? Like there are those kind of dynamics and stuff in play too. And I really like, you know, that you guys are bringing up and talking about the work that it takes to build relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's true of any relationship, but I think with friendships, you know, it's so easy to lose sight of.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's not necessarily anything wrong with the friendships that we're not putting a ton of work into. I mean, we can have casual acquaintances and stuff like that, right? But I think at the end of the day, everybody needs at least one or two, you know, good core friends that they do feel vulnerable and comfortable with, that they can kind of go deep with, that they've done the work with. And that's really important. And I think it's so easy to lose sight of how much it takes to get to that point.
Yeah.
Because it is so deceptive, right? Like early on in a relationship, you feel like you're clicking, you know, you're have a lot of similarities, similar interests, things like that. You're talking about a lot of stuff. It feels good to be around them. You know, when you leave from, you know, hanging out with them, you feel good and excited and energized and things like that, right? But at the end of the day, you know, you still sometimes see some of those relationships fade. And I think it's just very easy to kind of, for lack of a better term, go through that honeymoon phase in any kind of friendship or relationship, right? Mm-hmm. Where you feel like everything's good, but you haven't really done the work yet to make it last, right? Like it's actually funny because I was kind of thinking about a couple of my closest friends from high school this week, and just kind of feeling like, man, we don't talk that often anymore. And we were like, we were very much the like both Will and Sim kind of dynamic, you know, in high school. And we were like the Three Musketeers and everybody like knew us as that, right? Like they were like, the three of you are always together kind of thing. And it was just kind of one of those things where I was like, man, yeah, it just feels like, and granted, I'm as guilty as any of us in it. I haven't reached out to them very much. I haven't been very good about talking with them and that kind of thing. Well, then my birthday was this last week. And so then they were both reaching out and then we started talking a bunch. And it was just kind of one of those nice, like, oh no, like the work that we put in is still there. You know, the like 10, 15, 20 years of friendship that I've built with these guys has not like gone by the wayside. Right. And I think that's a really important thing about getting to that point and doing the work with the friendship is even when you kind of lose touch for a time, you know, there's still those people that you can go back with. And if you've really done the work and you've really gone through, I mean, really you've gone through the shit together, right? It's that's the biggest thing, I think. You know, then those are friendships that you can kind of always go back to no matter how far, you know, removed you've kind of become from them. And I find it interesting because I don't want to say I look back and they're like the fondest memories, but I think in a lot of ways, those points of tension and those points of we had to stop and sit down and do the work are among the most powerful memories I have in a lot of my friendships, right? Because I like those are the moments when everything's falling apart and you know what's hitting the fan and you're just like, I don't know who to count on. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what to do. And those are those moments, right? When your friends come through or, you know, when you're butting heads so hard with your friends, but that's ultimately what makes the relationship survive and thrive. Right.
Yeah.
Kind of like we described with the three of us. And I look, you know, I look back with such a fondness and respect for those times in my life, in my friendships, because I know what they've meant for those friends, right? Like I know if for whatever reason, if the podcast were to dissolve and, you know, we kind of were far removed from each other for a long time, I know, you know, 5 years down the road, we could still get together and we would still be the same great friends that we are now, right? Because we have that network.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. Man, getting weepy.
Right?
I'm just thinking back, like, have either of you gone through like a friendship breakup?
Yes.
Where like you're expressing, I'm sorry, this is not working out.
Yep. It's tough.
Like, it feels harder than a romantic breakup to me.
Yeah, in a lot of ways it is. Like, I can remember like in adult life, like having to do it with a friend from a former job and just we're having the boundaries conversations, boundaries were being crossed and I'd communicated it and just repeatedly kept saying, it's like, well, you just basically need to toughen up or this is who I am, take it or leave it. And basically just had to say bye and basically like dropped off stuff that we'd shared back and forth that up. And it's just like, hey man, this isn't cool. I'm not doing this anymore. Have a great life. And haven't spoken to this person since.
Yeah,
and
that was
a like,
hard one to watch.
It's been like 5 years now.
Yeah.
And this had been a person where we had talked regularly. We had talked about doing a podcast with this person. Like, it
hilarious.
Was the first time.
Hilarious to look back at what it could have been.
Yeah.
That would have been a nightmare.
I heard so many stories early on.
Yeah.
Yep. And so, yeah, I've had to do that. I've had to do two of them in my adult life.
Yeah.
And to basically break up and just say, and just cut off all lines of communication. And yeah, it's hard to do, especially when you've done life together. Like, especially when you've encountered some of those scenarios, done some of the work.
Yeah.
Only to discover that there was a crack in the foundation.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like a real hard line for me when I realize like I just can't with a new friend is when I express something that hurts or is, you know, I don't want to say a trigger because I feel like that's become a really inflated word, but you know, something that that makes me uncomfortable, like a boundary, but more like topically.
Sure.
And that's picked at, like, it's their job to improve me in that regard, as opposed to just like respecting that I'll work it out with my therapist. I've had situations in which someone took it upon themselves to try to improve me in that regard, and I'm like, no, that's not your job. I never asked you to do that.
Right.
No, thank you. I never gave you permission to delve into that. I didn't even bring it up as a topic of conversation. That was all you. And if I can't be vulnerable in that regard, it's really easy for me to be vulnerable about what I get pissed about, because even in your anger, you feel like some semblance of power. But when it's like, I'm afraid of this thing, or this made me feel really sad, I think actually what makes me sad is harder for me to talk about than what makes me scared. And so when I express something that makes me sad, and that's not received well, I'm just like, I'm done. I tried. And right. Now I feel I feel twice as vulnerable. There was no payoff to this. I need to exit while I can. And that's just a crappy feeling. When you put yourself out there and it's either not reciprocated or just not respected. It's one thing if someone's like, I can't do that, I'm just not there yet. But it's another to me if they're just like, well, that's dumb. I don't know why that matters so much to you. What do you think makes a good Christian friend? It's like a specifically weighty sort of designator.
Sure.
But this being a Christian podcast and having heard a lot of sermons about Christian friendship, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that topic of Christian friendship.
So I think this is interesting because we're recording this on April 3rd, the day before Easter. And having just watched with the podcast community the film Calvary, there's a few lines in that always jump out at me that kind of talk about Christian, like, it's not specifically about Christian friendship, but it definitely spurs me into thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
To where the main character James the priest is wrestling with some very weighty things that are happening to him, and he has no one that he can discuss those things with. And it's a good Christian friend is someone who you can bring a deep, heavy theological question to, be struggling with, and not be judged for wrestling with a question. And I think there are so many times to where, and so I ran into this more in evangelicalism, but I know for a fact that this is true interdenominationally. Like, this is an ecumenical question. It's, you can have all the theological training or not have all the theological training in the world, but if you don't know how to ask any questions and you don't know how to react when someone presses you on why you believe something, the line from the film, if your faith can be lost so easily, it must not have been much of a faith to begin with, always rings through in my head.
Yeah.
If you can't deal with life issues as a friend and then deal with theological issues on top of life issues, I don't know if that's a person to do deep community with. They can be the acquaintance. They can be your acquaintances. I don't know if they're the people to do deep community with. What about you guys?
I think I would say, at least on the surface, that the differentiation between what makes a good Christian friend and what makes a good friend is not as overt as I think oftentimes we would like to make it out to be in Christian culture. I think that's I think that's something that's true across the board when it comes to Christian cultural trends, right? Is like we like to make it something that's sort of flashy and overt and in our face so that we can define those differences. But I think in a lot of ways, they're not easy to define in most cases, right? And I think I actually like the way that you put that, Alan, is basically being able to do the work, but then interpret it theologically on top of that. I think that is actually a really important dimension of Christian friendships. And I think for me, a lot of what it boils down to is kind of, it's just sort of one more area of vulnerability, one more specific type of boundary kind of thing where, you know, I have really good friends who are some of my closest friends who are not Christians who, you know, like I can get into conversations with them about that kind of thing, but it always ends up being, you know, kind of clunky, kind of one-sided. It's kind of hard to, you know, cause we're coming at it from completely different perspectives. Right. So it's hard to really engage with those things in a functional way. Whereas I think what the defining thing about good Christian friendships, I don't know. I don't know that it's, I don't know it's something that I can put my finger on. You know, I think it's, I don't want to say it's, you know, again, those overt things of like, I don't think someone who's like, oh, I'm going to be your accountability partner automatically means you're good Christian friends, right? I'm not saying that good Christian friends don't keep each other accountable and stuff like that. It's just, I don't think coming to someone and saying, these are the bullet points that makes you a good Christian friend makes any sense at all, yeah. Right? Which is kind of, again, true across the board when it comes to Christian cultural things. I think it's much deeper than that, right? It's the friendships where they're going to hold you accountable whether you're asking them to or not, right? Yeah. Because they you know, when you get to know someone at that deep level, when you've done that work, when you really start to become vulnerable with people, they start to see all of the things that you don't see, right? They start seeing all your blind spots and then they start calling you out on those things, right? And those are some of the, I think, the most important pieces of being not just a good friend, but a good Christian friend. It's being able to see your friend's blind spots, but also recognizing their theological blind spots and the way that they're not being Christ-like in their lives and things like that, right? Those are kind of the skills, I would say, that are really defining when it comes to having a good Christian friendship and being able to have open, honest, integrity-filled conversations around those points where we don't agree, because it doesn't matter who you are or how embedded you are in a denomination, you and your best friend are going to have a number of points theologically where you just don't agree on things, right? Like, that's inevitable. There's going to be a couple sticking points here and there, and I think the ability to discuss those things, respect one another's viewpoints, and not always feel the pressure to change it, right? That's something else that Christianity is terrible about, is you have to be willing to accept the fact that you might be wrong. And at the end of the day, if this whole being a Christian thing is about God, like, giving us a multiple choice test on theology, and if we don't get every question right, we're just completely screwed, doesn't make any sense at all, right? Like, I pity the person whose theology jives with that notion.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to work that way. And so, you know, I think it's important for us to be able to set aside our differences, maybe more than anything else. And it's not that we can't still value those things or feel that those are important, but we have to be willing to hold the tension of, I believe something and you believe something that's completely different, and it might be okay.
Yeah, I like not only setting aside our differences, but actually celebrating them, because I didn't grow near so much as when I was in community with Christians of a bunch of different denominations that pushed me on a lot of things that I thought I had in the bag. That I'm like, no, you know what? I actually have to do more digging on that. I don't have nearly as, you know, firm an answer as I thought I did. But that was because I, you know, was previously in an echo chamber and had no reason to fight anybody. And I think it comes back to the intellectual humility part that you got into when we talked about study as a discipline. And I think that's actually another sticking point for me in realizing in friendship is if I don't feel like I can actually have a conversation with you about, you know, doctrine, theology, what have you, and it not be done respectfully. And I don't mean just like we use our nice adult voices to talk right. about hard things, but I mean like, and Alan's going to laugh at me because I say this all the time, but like defining our terms, finding a mutually agreeable definition for like the words that we're going to be throwing around.
It's so common that I use it.
It's so important because otherwise you're just going to be talking circles around one another and then you're going to continue to think the worst about the other person.
Right.
And it doesn't help in the discourse, but that's where conversational narcissism gets in. And I think for me, that's one big thing that I wish people who think about friendship in Christian terms would really get their heads around is that conversational narcissism is the death of all friendship. Because conversational narcissism, ultimately, it's when you're thinking about what you're going to say next as opposed to actually reading or hearing what the person is telling you.
Right.
And a lot of the times that's born out of the fear that you won't get a turn or that your point will be lost or disregarded. And admittedly, I fall prey to this a lot because I've been in so many classrooms where women were, their opinions were discarded or just like, well, you're the weaker vessel, so, you know, you're probably gonna have a wrong opinion. And that's taken me a while to unlearn because obviously, I'm not always in a classroom setting. And two, because I've since met guy friends who don't treat me like trash. So it's okay. I don't have to constantly be thinking of them in terms of being in those classrooms that were really frustrating. And I don't feel like I have to be fighting all the time. That's something that's been hard for me to unlearn in my now healthier friendships is not everything's a fight, Ashley.
Right.
You can cool it. Because for so long, everything was a fight. So if a conversation as hardlined or as difficult, as weighty as what you guys are describing is happening,
uh-huh.
I need the security of knowing that it's being taken seriously and that terms will be defined so that everyone has a fighting chance. And fighting chance is
right.
a poor phraseology there because I just said you don't need to fight. But so everyone has equal footing on the conversation. And I guess I just always feel really, I feel like I'm being aggressive when I ask what we mean by something because I think theological conversations that are done like as laymen, as opposed to just like if you're writing a scholarly paper and you're having it peer reviewed, have become so fraught and tense, especially online,
yeah.
that when you ask for a definition, someone immediately braces themselves for a bigger conflict when you really, you're just like, I just want to know what you mean by that. I'm not trying to suggest
right.
you're wrong. I just want to make sure we're on the same page. And I think that's when you get people who are really anxious about over communicators because they automatically assume, oh, they're over communicating because they think I'm stupid. And I can say personally, no, I just really need the certainty that I understand what you're saying.
Right. No, I hear you. And I think, it actually, you know, obviously there's a different caliber here that I know you'll relate to also,
mm-hmm.
but that problem of feeling like you need to have a voice can be a very much an introvert problem too.
Yeah.
Right. Where you don't necessarily sort of, assert yourself into conversations well, or like at the times that maybe you should kind of thing.
Yes.
Cause that's something I'm terrible about. Right. Is like, oh, I'll just sit and not interrupt. Right. And
mm-hmm.
then the conversation just moves and then it goes and then it's gone. And I'm like, oh, I really had a great point, but now we're so far beyond the point that I should have inserted it that now it doesn't add anything to the context anymore kind
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Yeah.
Right. But then I also have discovered very similarly to what you're describing, Ashley, that need to define terms is really important. And it's, you know, I've definitely, as I've explored more and more things through college and seminary, tried to learn that humility for myself too, of not just automatically assuming I understand where people are coming from, right? And so I have started to get a lot better about asking those questions too. And it's funny, yeah, like the stuff that you're describing about how defensive people get or how frustrated they get because they're just like, well, you know what I mean by that. And I'm like,
no, I don't. That's why I asked. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Like I have an idea of what I think you might mean, but I don't want to just assume that I know what you mean because if I'm wrong, that totally changes the context of this conversation. Exactly. And, you know, especially when it comes to building relationships and building deep friendships and stuff, that's the last thing I want to do is, you know, you say something. And it raises a red flag for me. And I'm like, whoa, back up. What do you mean by that?
Yep.
You know, and then to have somebody get frustrated with me for things like that. Right. But, you know, all you really want to do is make sure you're on the same page with that person with those things. And that is, it's so important because next thing you know, it's kind of that, again, when the chips are down, when you're in that moment where it really matters. If you don't have your terms defined, that's when there's the crack in your foundation, right?
Yep.
Is you think you've got it all lined up and then you come to that moment of tension where it really matters.
Yep.
And all of a sudden it cracks under the pressure because you didn't take the time to work out what do we both mean by this when you're having those conversations.
Yeah. You bringing up introversion actually highlighted something for me that I realize is, again, super important. I realize now, I actually have a lot of rules for my friendships the more we talk. But I'm realizing that setting rules for discourse and having them respected is so important to me because it takes so much emotional energy for me to participate that if I don't feel like my input is respected, and I don't mean agreed with, and I don't even mean like, you know, treated as if it's special. I don't mean that. I just mean like regarded respectfully in the process of the discourse. Then I feel like I've just wasted a ton of energy and it drains me like twice as much. And then I don't feel like I have any more energy left to participate. So I just check out. And I think that's why I have a lot of trouble. Like when we talked about Bible studies, like it's been hard for me to find Bible studies that I really engage well with, because you have so many people from so many different backgrounds and you don't have the time unless you make the intentional time of being like, these are our rules for discourse. There really isn't that time to set. And also, you know, when you're working with various generations as well, like certain generations are going to be cool with that and certain generations are going to be like snowflake. So it's hard to like really sort of get a groove unless you just naturally click with a group.
Right.
So then you kind of, at least I found that I've sat through a lot of Bible studies as opposed to participating in them, because I'm like, this dialogue that I have in my head is not going to make any sense to them. And I'm probably going to try to offer it and it's just going to lay there like a dead herring. And then people are going to move on like they haven't seen it.
Yep.
But you can very quickly drop all, you know, you can forget the intellectual humility. And when you do that, immediately transition into a pearls before swine mentality and then start to just hoard information as opposed to sharing it. Cause you're just like, well, they're not going to get it anyway. And then play the sort of like misunderstood genius, which you're not, by the way.
Right.
No one is. And that's when you get into like the really unhealthy sort of like cloistered communities, especially online, where you end up just putting yourself in an echo chamber. And that's not iron sharpening iron in any case. And that's where I get really, as much as I have some particular I think we can all safely say we're probably more progressive than most. I think people know us well enough, if they've been listening long enough, what we kind of think about certain things. I do get concerned when we choose our religious communities based off of specific qualities, because if we're constantly looking for religious communities that only think the way we do, then we're not going to have any growth. It's kind of like what I said about, you know, being a pacifist when you don't see anybody. Well, if you've got a bunch of people that talk and act and look exactly like you. You're not really going to be pushed or challenged on anything. You're just going to all be like, we're all on the same team? Sweet. And then do the same things you all do.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's going to be really hard for you to grow, and vice versa. Like, I trust that anyone who's listening to this has, you know, valuable things to contribute to a community. You're basically keeping that from a community that could really use your, you know, blessed differences. And that's a shame. And I totally get, you know, being emotionally exhausted and not wanting to participate in heated conversation all the time. That's not healthy. But I think it's really largely beneficial to the kingdom if you put yourself in communities that aren't just like a self-assured sort of unquestioned sort of space.
Right.
You know, I think that does a lot. I think that does a world of good in the long run. I've not grown so much as of when I've been in a community that has been truly diverse in ideas, not just in the trendy diversity that we see online.
Absolutely.
100%. Well, I think that's going to bring us right to time, and that seems like a great place for us to transition.
Friendship's hard.
Out. Friendship is hard, but friendship is worth
it. Really
it
really is.
It's so good.
We would love to hear your thoughts on friendship. MinMaxPod@gmail.com, MinMaxPod on all the socials except Reddit, where we're /u/MinMaxPodcast. 773-789-9369 is a voicemail. For voicemails 3 minutes or less, anything longer than that, you can send that to the email. And we will choose to respond to most of those on the air.
You know, it's like, okay, so I hate meeting people, but I love having great friendships. I hate olives, but olive oil is awesome. Making olive oil takes a lot of pressure. That's my metaphor for today.
Nice. Well
Thank
done.
You. Thank you.
You know, this is going to be a terrible description for the audience, but, you know, that very much was like the, you know, you can touch your nose two ways.
What?
This way or this way. You really took the long way around the barn on that one.
You know what? It works for me.
And I guess that's, at the end of the day, that's what matters. It's what works
when
for
you're,
you.
When you're on a podcast, you can only be a conversational narcissist.
Huh. That's reframing a lot of stuff again. I'm gonna have to think about this one, guys.
Kyle, we have to have more conflict.
Please, no.
I'm not being sharpened.
I have enough of that in my life outside of this one great thing where I can be unguarded-ish once
Quick,
a week.
Find something we disagree on.
The extended universe was never good, and it should probably stay out of it forever.
Oh, Alan!
Feel like he's gonna punch
you
through
guys
his webcam.
Just keep pushing that button. Just you wait till next week, because I am not barring any holds anymore.
Quoth is the villain of the entire series.
Could be.
No, Alan.
No!
You can't just be agreeable!
Shocker. We love you, Mappersands. Happy Easter. We'll see you soon.
Get vaccinated.